Okay, Paul Wallace is in studio with me, retired Garda Sergeant, Divisional Crime Prevention Officer. Paul, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
Do you want to fight? We can fight now.
Well, we can. Never stopped us before.
Now, come here, Paul.
I haven't that in my script, you know.
No, I know the script. Don't mention the scripts. You told me not to mention the scripts that you never have. How does it feel? I mean, lots of things happen in our lives that sort of change, you know, that change from, it could be a bereavement, it could be having a child, it could be anything. This is a biggie, isn't it? This is a big change for you.
Yeah, it's only a week, you know, a week, and I finished up on St. Patrick's Day, which was a nice day to finish up because everyone was down the town and everyone was in good form and all of that. And it was a great kind of a closure for me as such. And we had a wee evening in the canteen on Friday evening, the Friday before, and we had a kind of a private thing down Cashlanore in Annagret. It was lovely last Tuesday night, just with my mother and my uncle and
lovely
friends and colleagues from work here and some from down the country. Antoinette Cunningham was up.
I saw her on social. Yeah. She had a nice tour of the county as part of that as well.
Owen Connell was there, who was at the head of her medical insurance, and they served on the board of the Garda Medical Aid for a while. And a good friend of mine, John Cavanaugh from Galway, and that was about all the travellers as such, you know, and then just my mother, which was great, Bridget, she's 81, and my uncle Michael, who's going, I think, is 87. So, you know, it's a great milestone to be able to retire from the Guards and have your mother
there,
and your uncle there. Now, my dad died in 2013, but he was, I mean, hopefully he was there in spirit, but, you know, my mother, I wouldn't be here only for her, and you know, we had a great childhood and it was lovely just to look down and have them there. And I really probably, it was only when I was standing saying a few words that I realised how lucky am I, you know, to have these people here.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, have your mother there and your uncle and others and good friends and people who have stuck with me nearly the length of the 40 years, you know.
Was there any option to this? Had you reached as long as you could serve, or what's the situation?
My birthday, I'd be 60 years of age.
Well, you could have had an extension now. Well,
I could have, and I was asked a few times. And our new chief superintendent, Gretty Sheridan, who was with us last Tuesday night, came down and she talked about it. And it had been talked about, Antoinette had mentioned it to me in Dublin as well. But no, if I had to be able, somebody said to me the last day, I came in and I met a fella and he says, what's this 39 and a half years? You know, could you not just have gone to 40 like everyone else? And he says, oh, I just got fed up. But I would have had to go to August to get to 40, and I would have had to look for the extension because you go at 12 midnight on your birthday. That's the way it is. And I had no interest in that. I think it's great to go into the guards and come out.
Yeah,
you
but
know.
Why had you no interest in it? Like, do you think you've done your time?
Yeah, I think I did. And I think there's a lot of change coming, and there's a lot of, you know, the new policing model will come out, and there's just change. And I found, as you know, I was on the AGSI National Executive for a long time from 2018 to 2023. And I decided to go off that last April, this time last year, just after conference, and they're having their conference today and tomorrow down in Westport. I didn't tell anyone at conference that I had made up my mind, but I actually had.
What was the reason?
I just felt I had enough of it, that, and I felt it was time to start shedding stuff. And then I was on the board, the management board of the Garda Medical Aid Society, which is a great organisation. We have our own private insurance as such, and it was an honour to be on that representing AGSI. And then I went off that, and then I went off the divisional committee. So I was just kind of stepping back, and Goretti Sheridan, who was a superintendent at it, she came down one day and we were chatting, and I said, I just find I'm just have lost interest in a lot of stuff now. And when you lose interest, sometimes maybe you become argumentative or cranky. You know, it's time to let it on to new people and get other people in there.
You, from Burtonport, of course, you joined the Guards in 1985. A little bit early for me to remember, but certainly in the era where I can remember.
You'd have been about 25 that time.
But my recollection of the Guards was very, very different. You know, you had an awful lot of respect for the Guards. The Guards were in the school. The Guards were in the community. You know, we had Garda Sergeant Ignatius Larkin around Ballantrae and Lahey for a time. He'd be in the school. He'd be familiar with him. There was a fear. And when I say fear, I don't mean you'd be afraid of them. But there was sort of a fear of consequences of doing wrong actions. Like, you would get the feeling that if you had a scrap up the top of a field with someone that the guards might end up being called or something, right?
Yeah.
And as I say, I think it was a healthy fear and respect. This it, probably similar to people in the church, if you know what I mean, the parish priests and stuff. Am I looking at it with rose-coloured glasses, or is that actually how it was then, that the guards were within the community, that they could land at your door, that you'd see them in the school? Or maybe it's still ongoing and I've just aged and don't realise what's going on, but I just see it differently.
I suppose we look at things with different eyes and different lenses, and as we get older, you know, I joined in 85. I was actually one of the first kind of from around our area. It wasn't, the guards wasn't that popular of a thing to do. The fishing industry was great in Burtonport and Killybegs, and they were interlinked. I would have had a very good job in 85. I was doing quality control in what was then called Campbell Seafair in Dunloe, the John West Cannon Factory, still there, which is great. And I was on good money. I had a two-year-old car, nice fancy Escort, you know, I'm into cars. I don't know what, I can't just pinpoint. It was a local sergeant, God rest him now, Donald Ward from Carrick. He said to me, you would be a good candidate for the guards. And we filled in the form and sent it off. And then I was called for an interview. And my late dad took me up for the interview to Dublin. I remember it was a very snowy day. And I didn't think we would make it between Doherty and Fintown, even starting off. And then it just went on. And then I went down. And even the day I went in, I nearly left. It was recounted in the paper last week. Joe Dorian, who was the retired sergeant now in Castlefin, Joe knew me from the Four Lanterns because I was at the regional college here. I had done electronics. And that was kind of the career progression, really. That time you did the leaving and then you went to the local RTC or college if you had a better leaving, probably. And Joe went to lift my bag and I said, no, I don't really think this is for me. And he says, I'll come in and spit a crack. And it started to rain and we walked in and everyone else had a suit on and I had actually a rally jacket and I hadn't got my hair cut. So I didn't really look the part. I remember I got 3 or 4 haircuts the first week. Did the training, great group of guys over the time. Most of them went to Dublin. 2 of us went to the country, which was Monaghan and Clonus, Conor Boyle from Ballyshannon, and I went to Monaghan Town. And that was a great start. Monaghan was very busy. You had the whole political thing going on there. You were surrounded by Tyrone, Fermanagh and Armagh. Checkpoints, the main road going through. Anyone who went through Monaghan them times, it was always, we were always seemed to be directing traffic. There was no ring roads. The border was busy. The main road was busy. Accidents. It was a provincial town. So you got a real...
you got everything.
You got everything at you, yeah. And I was probably very lucky then. I had only 7 or 8 years service when I was promoted and I was supposed to go to Clonus. Got a phone call, would you go to Glencolum Kill? It was my home county.
What did you feel about heading back home though?
At the time, I suppose it was great to get back, but I was kind of on the point that we were 7 or 8 years in Monaghan at that stage, had our own house, and I was probably settling. I was involved in a motor club and a lot of stuff. And when I went back, I hated it. I actually did. And my former sergeant, dead now, God rest him, Eamon Donlan, he said to me, it'll take you 3 years to settle, which it did. Because I had gone from a very busy place to somewhere where basically 3 crimes
was
a year.
Was your security a concern at that time?
What do you mean?
Just like in terms of being a member of the force, the type of policing that you were doing. Did you have to...
In Monaghan?
In Monaghan.
Oh, yeah, well, it was, you know, we would have had a couple of close shaves at the time and we were probably lucky to get away. The force was, you know... primarily very young there, a lot of young. It was primarily Donegal people. I think there was over 80, there was at least 80 odd in the station, and there was half of them were from Donegal. Mm. Like, you know, lots of people that I have served with subsequently up here. They moved back to Donegal. We all probably gravitated back if you didn't marry and settle down there, you know.
So. Right. And you talked about a couple of close shaves.
Ach, you would have, yeah. You know, you were on the border and different things and, you know, it was just...
You're not going to give me any details.
No, I don't see the logic in going back on that. Like, times have moved on and that was what we were doing.
But it was
for
trouble,
right or for
wrong. You saying then it was sort of trouble-related stuff?
Yeah, of course. Okay. And you were always out on checkpoints. You were always out on the border. You were just, it was go, go, go. If you came in there in the morning at 6:05, to be saying, where were you? You know, that was the way it was.
So you went to Glencolum Kill from there. Yeah. I mean, that's night and day.
Oh, night and day. I remember ringing Glenties one day and said he should ring the station here. I think this phone's out.
Yeah.
Because I was had come from a divisional communication.
That was the early 90s at that point.
That was 93, yeah. End of 93, November 93. It's the time of the Downing Street Declaration. That was actually the night.
Mm.
And I remember going into Glen. We could hardly see it with fog. But a lovely place with lovely people. I remember being there the day the station closed as well, and I thought it was sad, you know, that...
But just in relation to your time policing there, because it is a completely different type of policing, yeah. Okay? And maybe different expectations from the public, what they expect from you, how you engage with them. A complete shift in terms of pace.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you young.
Very
okay.
young, yeah.
Did you go, wow, okay, I've landed on my feet here, or was it like, there's not enough here to keep me occupied?
Well, I didn't know. The man I replaced was the late Roddy Hayes, and Roddy was there for 29 years or something like that, and I was 28 years of age. So you can imagine the people, this young sergeant coming in, you know, this was going to just wreck the place. And there was another member there, Eugene McGonnell. I had a great friend, or I have a great friend, Joe Bradley over in Carrick. Joe was kind of the constant because he had a lot of what was happening over there. There was a lot of fellas coming on promotion as sergeants, and then going off. So they were delighted to see somebody who would hang around for a while. And you worked out at Glenties on and off as well. But Nick, it was just a totally, as you said, that it was a more community focused thing. And I remember Joe saying a thing to me one day, you know, in Monaghan, if you were walking out the door at 2 minutes past two after finishing your shift, and the biggest thing ever happened, which was probably a bomb at that time, unless there was a real need, you went off.
Mm.
You know, that's probably not a good example, but if there was an accident or something,
exactly
there was other people there to deal with it.
Yeah.
While in Glencolumbkill, you dealt with it from A to Z.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I had no experience of dealing with was sudden deaths and preparing files for the coroner. And that was something, you know, the chances of you getting involved in the like of that in Monaghan were very slim because there was so. But when if it happened in Glen or Carrick or Kilcar, you dealt with it from start to finish. And it was all about working with the community. And then the community alert schemes came in and all that, and then they used to take me into Letterkenny, and then I ended up working sort of hand in glove with Jim Moore, who's well known around the town and the county, and he was a great mentor to me and a great teacher, and he taught me a lot. He got me up in here. He got me doing public speaking, which I never would have thought I'd ever do.
When did the crime prevention part of it? Because, you know, Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace, crime prevention officer, it's almost all the words are linked together for a lot of people. It's like it's always been the case. But did you have a particular interest in crime prevention, or was that just a post that was going and you thought, right, Paul, you're the man for it?
You've kind of got it, half answered it, really. I was very young. As I say, I was taken into Letterkenny then, and I actually was the junior man on the unit, even though I was the sergeant. And I got badly hurt down the Port Road one night and slipped two discs in my back, and I was off sick. And Jim came to me and said, you could come in and help me. I need a bit of help. So many days. I was still going through the therapy and all of that sort of stuff for that. And that's really how it started. And at that time, we had the God forbid the Morris Tribunal, and there was a whole like a community relations program put in place, going out to the communities, doing the community alert, the neighborhood watch, the coastal watch, the hospital watch, the campus, all these things going
and
out into the communities.
And was that done as part of, I don't know, rehabilitation of the relationship between Gardaí and the public?
I think it was, you know, and like it, again, that's in the distant past, but it was a tough time for the guards up here, you know. And I know even when you go to Templemore, they'll be sort of looking at you and more or less saying, oh, that's the Donegal fellas there, we need to watch them or keep away from them, which was unfair because I remember saying to a fella one day, I got a bit thick, and I said, given the same set of circumstances in any district in the country, you could have the same thing. Because a lot of it was systems failures within the Garda Síochána, you know, and people got hurt in this. And some people may possibly did wrong and shouldn't have done it or whatever, and I'm not getting into that. But it was a difficult time for everybody, you know. And I think I looked at the whole promotion thing then, and I had done the inspector's exam quite young. I probably still wasn't 30, which was unusual at that time. And because I was the youngest sergeant for years in the country, never mind, it just had bucked the trend. And I was on a good career trajectory. Possibly if to stay in Monaghan, it might have been different. But look what's for you never goes by you.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother used to always say that to me, and I'm a firm believer in that. And the you know, then I kind of looked, we were back in Donegal, the kids were, John and Car, or John was born in 96, and you know, it was a kind of, do you uproot, you know, because when you're in Donegal, and particularly when you're living in West Donegal, it's a journey, it's an hour's journey to get out of the county. Well, if you were in Monaghan, you know, it's an hour, 2 hours to Dublin, all that. So that was kind of probably, I looked at that job and I had the background in electronics and that. I had an appreciation of cameras and alarms and systems. And I just thought that seems to suit me. And then I just kind of grew into it. And then I got involved with the association.
So when you're moving back here and you're making that kind of a move, can you kind of establish if you're going to finish out your career in Donegal, if you know what I mean? Rather than, because you're uprooting from Monaghan here, could you be moved somewhere else?
That was the model at that time. It's not maybe as bad now, the facility.
So people. Were you given any assurances that, right, we'll not move you significantly again? Or?
No, but if you went for promotion, the model that was there at that time is you could end up in Galway or wherever the slots were. Now they're a wee bit more benevolent about it. They're a wee bit more sympathetic because they realise it's very a lot of upheaval on spouses, partners, children.
And it would discourage from people for seeking promotion.
Yeah, it was. And it was definitely switched me off on that one as well. I'm not saying I would ever have got it. I just liked my job. I love the community thing. I love going out.
We'll talk a bit more about that. Hold your thoughts, because we have to take a quick break, so I don't want them backing up on us. We're in the company of Garda Sergeant, former Garda Sergeant now, Paul Wallace, and we're having a chat about his life and his career. We're going to pick it up really, I suppose, in earnest into the crime prevention and what have you. Back after these. I think, Paul, when you're in the business of crime prevention, be it, you know, in-person business sort of crime or remote crime or whatever it might be, it's a constant battle, isn't it, to be, you know, I'd say it's tight to stay a step behind the criminals because they're focused solely on finding new ways to exploit people. You might remember the big run we had of accesses through roofs and that side of stuff. That was a big thing for ages, wasn't it? Don't leave anything next to can get up on the roof. And then there's the cyber element and all that kind of stuff. They're constantly finding new ways to extort and what have you. And it's trying to actually you almost would struggle to keep up with them.
You're upskilling all the time in that field. It's something I did a lot of courses. I did the SEPTED, which is Crime Prevention Through Environmental Design, with the police in Scotland. And, you know, they did give us very good training. But as you say, like, it's hard to keep, like, the target hardening, the physical security will never change. And sometimes people put such an emphasis on electronic. And you would know from me and here, I'd be saying, well, the CCTV is the last thing you do. You start off and you do the other things. The cybercrime now is a massive, it's the biggie at the minute. And I don't think people even realise, you know.
Even the last couple of years alone, Paul, the number cloning.
Yeah.
Do you know, such an advance in criminality that is.
COVID gave them a big step up there because they upskilled a lot too. And then you have a new generation of young people coming up whose minds are very techy. Like, if you have a toddler, you'll see how they can navigate around a smartphone or a tablet. They can get to what they want right away. So their minds are wired different to ours. And we have to just try and, you know, but there is a saying that for businesses, the businesses that haven't been victim of cyber attack, they're not there. Mm. They're on the radar. Mm. It is going to happen. So, you know, that's a definite.
Yeah.
So that's just the way. And that's a big, big challenge for everybody and everybody in the retail trade. And you hear all the talk now about retail crime. And yesterday there was a lot of stuff on the news about, you know, about the massive increase in it and all of that, you know.
So. Yeah, which is often driven too by economic conditions.
Well, economic conditions, and I do feel, you know, if you were to ask me the question, and I would be strong on this, so we had a seminar there back before Christmas, I feel the way that retail crime is being managed, investigated, and the judicial follow-up, that's where it's fallen down.
Because what needs to change?
Well, I think it needs to be more instant. It needs to be more like a fine on the spot or something like that there. You know, there's a lot of very clever people that would have lots of different inputs. But what I find when you come up with an idea, you have a more people saying to you, oh, well, that won't work, instead of looking in. Like if you think if you were a retailer and I went to you and you had something, the first thing you have to do is a handwritten statement. Like that's for the boards, really. And then it goes in and there's a file and it goes into court and then you go down and it's adjourned and this is wrong, the cat had kittens, the wallpaper fell off the floor. There's all these excuses and you're looking in 12 months' time, whatever the value, even if it was 300 or 400 euro, you're looking at the amount of time you'd spend away and you're saying, why would I bother? And that apathy has built in, and we're on about it last night on Crime Call, that people have become more bolder in the way they're doing it. They become more bolder because there's no deterrent.
Well, you see, what astonishes me about that is the extent of it as well. Let's just take for an example people not surrendering their licenses in court.
Yeah.
Right? The numbers are astronomical. Yeah, the amount of people, I don't know if they're being given this legal advice or whatever it is, but the amount of people that know that they don't actually have to surrender their license and they can get away with it.
Get away with it, yeah.
You know, the numbers are through the roof. Yeah. Majority of people simply don't. Now, if I went into court, and this is my naivety, not because I'm soft or anything, and the judge says, right, you're going to have to leave your license, I'd go, all right, sorry, there you are.
I would be the same.
The majority of people know that, well, you can hold on to that.
Yeah, well, the people will have got advice from somewhere or whatever, and they know there's no legislative reach or ask for it, you know.
Yeah, because of your role is in prevention, okay, and you've done an awful lot of work in that, but I just want to talk about the force as a whole. Have we not really moved to a model now where we have reactive policing rather than sort of preemptive?
Yeah, it is reactive, and it's going more towards reactive. And the model that's coming down the tracks, you know, the jury would be out on it amongst the members on the ground, because it's really the reactive and the recording seems to be more important than anything else. Mm. And like at the end of the day, you have to be out in the community. And I know from the community alert schemes and all that, that opened so many doors for me. You know, I know from coming in and even our programme here on Highland Radio, which I would have fronted out after Jim for a long time, and JJ Kerwin and people like that. And it's great to see the model now with Grania and the young people coming in and doing it.
I love you for saying that.
Well, but she's very good. She puts an awful lot of work
she was
into it.
Earlier on though about how
you
old
saw
she
that
is.
You saw the 2 days that I had come in there lately.
Yeah, you've been all right.
But you see, I would be fine talking about the preventive side more than the appeals. Mm. But to go back, you know, from our point of view, I'd often go into meetings and people would say, oh, we feel like, you know, we know you. We thought you were taller, shorter, fatter, thinner, you know, because you're in our house, you are the voice. And it actually, and it's not to put a big ego on Paul Wallace, it was actually... it was a great door opener for me.
But that's
part of the community. So the community exactly, want to do business with you.
But when you get a situation now where you ring a local Garda station and you put through to someone in Galway, and it's triage there, and you're trying to describe where it is and what it is, that tells the public that personal touch is gone there.
Yeah.
That local knowledge is gone.
Yeah.
You know?
It's supposed, yeah. And I think we would have been very much, I used to, the one phrase that used to annoy me is when they would do an appeal, and I would have raised it so many times. And then contact your local Garda station. Your local Garda station is most likely closed.
Yeah.
Instead of, they've had the 24/7 model for a long, long time, and you would see up here, I would never say that.
No, you always
say
the 24/7. Yeah,
and we used to say to them, why don't you just do an advertising campaign around that? Mm-hmm. They didn't do it. Then they've gone now to the very other side where your calls are going into Galway. There is a dedicated desk for Donegal for every division, but at the same time it's that whole thought process around, oh, I'm ringing somebody in Galway and
it's
all of that
extra level.
Yeah,
and
I know.
It's not the local knowledge. Because people says, "Well, I'm calling from Carrigan's." Well, where's that? It's about you know what? It's worse
than when you hear them going out on the radio and mispronouncing the place.
I get you.
You know, and that doesn't lead into confidence.
Where if you had to grade not the people within it, because you know, we hear from not so much the AGSI, the AGSI do lobby and stuff, but we hear from the GRA of what the rank and file feel of the force. But just from your perspective, honestly, looking back, and it's not about the individuals, it's about the system, right? Like, say in 85 you came in and you'd give the Gardaí, on Garda Síochána, as a collective, a B, you know, in exam terms.
All right,
like,
yeah,
looking
yeah,
on
yeah.
now, what grades would you give on Garda Síochána Inc.? Not the people, not yeah. the sergeants, not
no,
the guard.
No, there's great people, yeah, and I'm the young people are yeah. terrific.
But,
and
but
you know,
they can only work within the system,
yeah, yeah,
right? So
yeah.
Well, in terms of the model and where we're at and where we're going,
I think the model has slid back. I'd say it's at a pass rate, you know, at yeah. the moment. And they keep trotting out these customer satisfaction. And I know surveys and all of that. But at the end of the day, the people, the communities have to know their guards. They have to be able to speak to them on, you know, the amount of people that would come to me and stuff that would be done that would never appear anywhere. Mm. And I would say, well, don't report that yet. Just let it sit. To see, and possibly the answer is in the community, and sure enough, the answer might come yeah. without them. And I'd always feel if people go to the guards, I'd have this saying always, I'd say, when you come to the guards, it's the last chance saloon, really. You've tried everything else. Now, when I joined the guards, I remember a lovely man, he's now deceased, from Rathmullen, Hugh McGloin, probably has relations still down there. He was an inspector in Monaghan. And I remember one day he said to me, and it was the best advice I ever got. And if a lot, I do say it a lot to young people. He said, "How are you getting on, young fella?" I said, "It's not too bad." He says, "What was it like stopping the first car out the Dublin Road out at Castle Shane or whatever?" Oh, I said, "I thought the car wouldn't stop. Why? Because I seen myself as me, mm-hmm. and I didn't see myself as in a uniform." Mm-hmm. But the car stopped anyway, and we chatted. And he says, "I'm going to say something to you now. When you stop a man or a woman in a car in the morning or whatever, and there's something wrong with the car, maybe road tax, insurance is a different matter, tyres, you know, it's a health, a safety. But he's just, this is what he said, you never know what that person has pulled the door out on in the morning. Mm-hmm. You don't know, is there marital problems, is there children problems, is there health issues or whatever. And if there's something wrong, you know, he says, just consider it. And that's where discretion comes in. Yeah. And he said, the decent man or woman will appreciate that and it will come back to you tenfold. Yeah. While the persistent offender, he'd be there next week, the week after, yeah, the week after that. Down, and yeah. it was something that always stuck. And I used to always say, the rear view mirror, you know, how well have I done things? How well have I conducted myself?
I guess,
and
yeah.
But I think what has happened now is the discretion, Greg, has gone out of it. It's all, the guards are gone a bit soft. And I would have said that even while I was serving if I was asked, because they're so constrained, they're afraid to do everything or anything. Why? I think it's our leadership. I looked at a profile on LinkedIn there, and some of the profiles of some of the people on LinkedIn, it's as good as cartoon time, really. You know, people who are saying they did this and they did that, and they're all experts in crime prevention when they retire. But I was looking at a guy who went from Garda rank to chief superintendent rank, and he retired bang on the 50 years. And the average time after the rank of sergeant that he spent as an inspector, superintendent and chief was 2 years and 9 months. Now, what did he bring to that organisation? Mm. He brought nothing. Mm-hmm. Because nobody can go up a rank and in 2 years have it sussed. You're only learning.
Yeah, I guess.
And these guys go forward to interview. Now, what was wrong there? I would say it was the interview process, mm-hmm. the people who let him through. Instead of saying, why are you here presenting yourself? You're only promoted 2 years. Why are you, you know, there's no, we've never seen any real
well,
genius.
Can't prove yourself in that.
Aye, but you've never seen, with the organisation, you've never seen the organisation quantum leap because they had these great people either, because it's a very conservative and very controlled and a very administrative organisation, even yet, no matter how much IT you put into it.
Well, you know, I mean, when you talk about leadership, you can only go to the top. How would you assess Drew Harris as the Garda Commissioner?
He probably got a very poisoned chalice at the time. I think that if they leave Noreen O'Sullivan alone, she was on track to sort out a lot of things, and she had come up through the ranks and she had a certain more level of acceptability. And I can be criticised for saying this, but Drew Harris doesn't. and it's been apparent where you've had vacancies at deputy commissioner level and people aren't applying for it. I think they've taken in too many people from other jurisdictions. They've taken in people and put them in charge of our community relations from organisations who really wouldn't know very much
but
about community relations.
But even at the top level of the Guards, the Gardaí, that doesn't reward their efforts, because what that decision to appoint from outside the jurisdiction really was saying is we have no faith in the Guards that have actually properly, genuinely worked their way up to the top. It was a public relations exercise. It was, in other words, we're going to bring in a new brush from outside because it just gives the impression that the Gardaí aren't fit to police themselves or can't produce someone from within their ranks to produce themselves. That's a slap in the face.
Yeah, but I think it was government that done that, and people should never forget that the whole new policing model has government backing. It's been run by the Department of Justice, so they can't even blame the Department of Justice anymore, because they took, I know that from my association time. Drew Harris and I've met him, he's a very decent, he's around my own age, he's a decent fella who's probably trying to do the impossible. And
but do you say doing the possible? But Nora, you believe Noreen O'Sullivan was on the way to?
I think she
impossible.
Was. I think if they'd leave her alone, and I have to say it was your people, and you know, and I don't mean your people, but the media did hound, and the media was probably been fed by people who didn't like her for whatever reasons. And I don't want to personalise it around Noreen O'Sullivan, who I knew well, but she was a decent person with a common touch, and I'm not saying that Drew Harris hasn't, but it's just a difficult. I think they made that move out of the organisation too fast to appease whatever.
That's why I mentioned, described it as a PR exercise, whether that's driven by the media or a decision taken by government.
I think it wasn't good. I don't know if it was a, like the policing model was there in the shadows anyway. Somebody was going to have to take it and implement it, and Drew probably came in and he's trying to do his best. But there came other people in then from other jurisdictions, and I don't know if they understand the Irish culture. The Irish culture of policing is totally different to what goes on across the water. If you've had an interaction with the police in England, I was talking to somebody there lately where the tools were stolen out of their van, and they went down on the third time in Birmingham. They went down, and the policeman says, "What are you doing here? You have insurance. Sort it out. Yeah. Don't be expecting us to sort it out."
Yeah, but when you say that the policing is different here, and it seems to be changing by people bringing people in. That might not be an accident. That could be by design.
Well,
do you know what I mean? So it's not like it might not be a mistake. That might be precisely what they're trying to achieve for whatever reason.
Yeah, we're going to be coming up to an election now, and you know, you have your new Taoiseach on waiting and all of that. And they're saying, oh, they're going to get tough on crime and they're going to do all of this and do all of that. But like, people must remember that the policing model that's been rolled out has been rolled out by government. It's not been rolled out by the guards. It's not been rolled out by anybody else.
Even locally, I do remember there were one or two politicians. One springs to mind that seemed to really back the Gardaí here. That kept the numbers, any reduction in numbers and what have you on the floor of the Dáil brought up all the time. You don't hear that much.
No,
anymore.
It's kind of gone off
for some reason.
For some reason, yeah.
Politically. Politically, the guards and their cause don't get the representation in the Dáil that they once did, because it used to be every other day, right?
But like, even a simple thing. I remember when they closed the station in Glenties, and changed the district to Milford. Like, we would have had robust discussions with them that time, and I remember it was at assistant commissioner level that, you know, that putting Milford as the district headquarters didn't work, and it's actually silly. And I used the example one day. I said, if my father wanted to meet his local super now, he used to drive through Letterkenny to go out to Milford. Now, he'd be as well going to see the chief when he's passing by and get his problem sorted if he has a problem. But like, we tried to say at that time, the place has been big. It's bang in the middle. It's the bang in the middle of the most density. So if they have to take a prisoner from Dunloe now, it's an hour's journey over bad roads to Milford. So you're denuding the policing service over there. So the guards over there have to be very careful. Do we arrest this fella or what do we do? Because if we go, there's nobody here to replace
us. And the criminals know what's going on.
Yeah, and like at the end of the day, the community focus, the guard that goes out and manages the football team that's in the cycling club and the walking club and all that, people get to know you out of the uniform, and that's very, very important. And there's great work going on like that too, and I wouldn't like to be leave here and people not think.
I understand.
Because the young people are have the model of policing that they have, and they're doing their best. The young people now are different. They're not as maybe socially inquisitive as we were, you know, because it's all on their phone.
But things
I'm friends with them on Facebook, you know.
Things do change. Yeah. Is the society, from a societal perspective, the biggest threat to people of all ages and all backgrounds, surely is drugs.
Yeah.
You know, we've got farmers that are addicted to drugs, that are getting drugs delivered to their farm.
You can see it starting to, it's starting to exert its teeth now. Mm. And if you notice in the last while, you can see, you know, there was always talk about drugs and there was the big, and then, oh, well, there's drugs at every crossroads and village in Ireland. But you can see now, if you watch the courts and if you look at the mental health issues and that sort of thing, the drugs are starting to bite. And I would have dealt with, I would have, was the one person in Donegal, I deal with all the threats, and a lot of the threats were around drug dealing and drug debt. It was a kind of a quiet
That's
area.
Threats that people in the public received.
Yes, yes. You could be given that mug of cocaine and Greg, work away there, and then you get another mug of it, and then the third time, then I say, well, look at now, Greg, you have a bill here of 5,000. I want you to do X, Y, and Z, and that's the way it happens. Mm-hmm. Or you owe me, you owe me 5 grand, but it'll be 7 tomorrow, and it'll be 10 at the weekend by Easter Sunday, and that's the way it is. Mm. So then you're in. You're there doing stuff.
Then they start threatening the family as well.
Then they threaten, and we've had that, and we've had them turning
up.
I think one
of the strongest indicators to me too of the prevalence of drugs is the detections of drug driving. You know, I mean, in terms of policing the roads, right? You know, the Gardaí can only do an absolute fraction of it. There's a lot of people with drugs in their system. Now, the half-life of drugs is different to booze. It might not be that day or that night, right? But you know, that's another indicator that, and with the cost of drink and what have you, and people aren't socialising out as much as they used to. These are all pointing to the fact that people are getting their kicks from drugs. Like,
well, certainly with cocaine, it seems to be literally everywhere now, and licensed premises and everywhere else where people are going out having a few drinks, but they're boosting up or whatever they do. What it, thankfully, I know nothing about it, and I don't ever want to. There's enough challenges on the health front without, you know, and like, what is that going to do down the road to people's wider health? They don't seem to be concerned.
Yeah. And what happens is too, you see, the door is now being opened for down the line these stronger drugs from America coming in, where you end up with zombie cities. Paul, listen, I'm going to have to wrap it up.
No, that's okay.
What are you going to do in your retirement? I mean, it's obvious you could go down the consultancy route. Is that something you're interested in, or do you want to focus on your cycling and your cars, or what do you know yet?
No, and I don't, you know, funny enough, it's been such a busy week this week. There's been a lot of things going on, and I spent Saturday and Sunday sanding a floor for somebody as a favour. You know, I like to keep busy. The cars are a great outlet for me, as you know. I love the classic car thing and the wee runs, and there's a lovely community there and all that. I like to get on the bike. It mightn't look like it, but I do go out, and I like walking and all of that. My mother is older now. There's things to do there. So I haven't really thought, I suppose, I have a lot of experience in that field. Consultancy would be something, but I wouldn't be looking at anything that would be too onerous or that sort of thing. Now, that's probably the silver.
I'll come back to you in 6 months, I think, maybe, and see. No, well,
at the moment, I think as my only wish for retirement is to have a bit of health and to be able to do a bit of travel with my partner Fiona and go out and about and, you know, see a bit of things, because it's great now not to have, because I was always constrained by the diary and the phone, and it's great now to have that. And look, thanks for the opportunity of coming
it's
in.
Been nice. You've
been very good to me over the years, and Sean and yourself and Caroline and all of the team here, Donal. You know, different days I'd get the call and I'd say, oh, geez, we can't go with that or whatever. And it was never breached. There was a great mutual understanding what is there. And I got a lovely presentation from the chamber down the town on St. Patrick's Day. It was a bit rushed because we were starting the parade, but it was very much appreciated. And look at thank you forever. You never caught me short, and you knew sometimes if I was a bit late on the detail to skip on to the next thing, or the script was upside down, or it was the script from the wrong month. But look, it was always, I always felt happy coming in here, and it's great to see Grania and Eunan and Charlene and all them bringing it on to the next level.
I think we're going to hear from you into the future, Paul, in one guise or another. Caroline never opportunity she will take, so we'll see. We'll chat in the future, no doubt, Paul. Yeah. It's not certain. Well, all I'm saying is it's certainly not the last time that you've been heard on this show, unless you boycott us. Former God of Sark, do you like the word retired or former?
Former's better. Yeah, retired.
I think retired.
Yeah, I had to put in a thing yesterday, and I had to put down retired, and I thought, you know, you just I think like you're former. About 80 years of age. I think I'm 22.
I tend to use former than retired, because what I would like myself.
Yeah, I kind of, that's a good point. The retired word was there, and I couldn't think on another word, farmer,
All right, former Garda Sergeant, Divisional Crime Prevention Officer, Garda Sergeant Paul Wallace, former. It's going to take a while. Listen, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Greg.
And we'll be back with more after the break. Helena, are you there?
Yes, morning, Greg. I'm here.
Good morning to you. Right, little or no water in the Tullygay area of Letterkenny. This has been going on 5 days now, is it?
5 days. So each morning there's zero water coming out of the kitchen tap. And at various times during the day, you might get a trickle for a short while. So you sort of jump on that and try and fill up, you know, buckets and water bottles and so on. And this has been going on since Friday. So Friday, all through the weekend, and this is the fifth day.
Have you had any contact from Ishka Éireann in relation to this? Or do you know what's going on?
It's a bit of a lack of interest, I would have to say, from Ishka Éireann, Greg. You call them up and they log a complaint and give you a reference number. Mm. When you call for updates, they say it's still being investigated. The upshot is, in the last sort of 24 hours or so, we've had to engage with our councillors, and they've put pressure on Irish Water, who are now on the ground, we've been told today, and the issue is due to be resolved by 2 o'clock today. But this isn't the first, and apparently it all stems from a burst water pipe on Lower Main Street in the middle or end of last week.
So if the truth be told, if you hadn't really made a bit of noise about this, you were just being passed off with the were investigating it then. Nothing actually was happening on the ground to try and get your water
absolutely.
Back. Well, what a waste of people's time.
Absolutely. And should we really have to be getting in touch with our councillors to get this sorted in this day and age? And it's the same every time. We're told every time, yeah, there's a reference, there's a team looking into it. There's nobody looking into it. There's nobody doing anything. So it's Tullygay, Bomini, and I'm told as well some houses on higher ground in the Maples and Rowan Park areas of Letterkenny as well. Mm. So it's not just, even if it was an isolated two or three houses, but it's not. It's a lot more than that. And this has not just been going on for a few weeks or a few months. It's been going on now for a couple of years, Greg. We had very little water over the Christmas period. January, there was very low pressure or no water every single day. February wasn't so bad apart from the first week. And here we are in March now, 5 consecutive days. So it's extremely frustrating. You know, we can't wash any clothes. I have 3 children myself, and, you know, other neighbours are in the same boat. Some of them are elderly and so on. Can't wash any clothes, can't flush any toilets. Dinner dishes from last night are sitting in the sink. You know, it's no way to be. And the Easter holidays now, the kids are at home. And yeah, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, and I think those who don't have disruptions to the water supply maybe can be a little bit guilty of taking it for granted. You know, as you say, just flushing a toilet, for crying out loud, having a shower, not being afraid that you could burn out your electric shower, your dishwasher, the washing machine not running because it's not getting enough pressure, on and on and on. So even if the water is back today, the question is well, what happens tomorrow? What happens in April? What happens in May? What's the long-term plan? You're a taxpayer of this country like everybody else. You're entitled, aren't you, to the same level of services as everybody else?
You would think so, yes, absolutely. We do. We are paying our taxes. And you know, we've been told that there are some upgrade works planned for May time,
right,
in relation to the pipe servicing our areas. So fingers crossed those works, first of all, go ahead as planned, and secondly, that they have the desired effect. To be honest with you, I'm not holding my breath, mm-hmm. because we've been told this for quite a while, that these works are, you know, they're looking into what upgrades might be necessary and so on. And every time it happens, you know, it's falling on deaf ears. Ishka Aaron don't seem in the least bit interested. Yeah. The last time I spoke to you, Greg, actually, I think was early January. Mm-hmm. And it was actually you that had informed me, oh, you need to be on their Twitter page. Apparently, that's the way they communicate, or their X page. So I went on there just this morning. There's absolutely zero about anything happening in Letterkenny. There's reports of outages in Trim and various parts of the country.
I did find one, not contradicting you, Helena, but it's going to be of no consequence anyway, 3 days ago, because I used, so I went to latest, you see, so I use it a little bit more. It does recognise there's a supply disruption in Bomini and Sarans, but more information to follow. No further information ever follows, by the way. They put up more information to follow at the end of the tweets, but no information ever follows. And a caller says that they've been there. I don't know how long you've been in this area, Helena, or you can corroborate this. They've been there for 10 years. No, never an issue until the last two or three years. So something changed in the last two or three years that the water supply became intermittent, low pressure and what have you. So was there a development in the area and they're getting, you know, they're sucking the pressure from where yous are? You know, it's not your fault, but... All right, Helena, listen, we're going to make our inquiries again with Ishka Aaron / Irish Water and we'll see what comes from it. I've another couple of texts from that area as well, which you may or may not be aware of. I'll read those out. And... we'll see what comes from it. Helena, thank you so very much. My sister has been staying with us in Bomini, along with her four-month-old daughter, who are home from Australia. They have to travel to extended family houses to bath, fill drums of water to be able to feed and clean. It's so stressful. They're seeking alternative accommodation for the next 2 weeks. Not an ideal family trip home. That's from Annie in Bomini. Can you imagine if you ever had any desire or indication to try convince family to move back home and their experience was having to travel to get water to look after a four-month-old baby? They'd rightly so laugh you out of it, wouldn't they? I'm a resident in Bomini, and to say that Ishka Aaron are an absolute disgrace is an understatement. We've been living here for over a decade with no issue until the past two or three years. Low water pressure, no water at all, and foul-tasting, smelling water is now the norm. Within a small neighbourhood, we're constantly contacting Ishka Aaron and getting either a generic copy and paste response or no response at all. To say we cannot even meet our basic hygiene needs in this day and age is an absolute disgrace. It is beyond a joke at this stage, and something needs to happen immediately to rectify the problem. On policing, Greg Drew Harris had very useful experience. He oversaw the change of the RUC to the PSNI. People from other jurisdictions can be useful to other forces. I believe that he was an asset to Ungada Síochána. Thank you for that. I wish you many happy years of retirement, Paul Wallace. You're a great man from Colum Cannon in Letcher. Best wishes to Paul from All at War and Atlantic Venture Racing. Wish Sergeant Paul Wallace all the best in his retirement. He's a real gentleman. He gave a talk on home security to elderly people, and he was such a gent to older citizens. He spoke to them so well and clearly. Good luck from George McFeely. Happy retirement to Paul from neighbours who shared your childhood. Great memories, Paul. That's Patricia in Killybegs. And just last one for now. Best wishes to Paul from Dennis and all in the Donegal Vintage Car Club. Dennis, I think you might be seeing a bit more of him going forward. Coming up after 12 this week on Ours to Protect, Donna Marie talks to Eddie Bradley about his new role as a climate ambassador with Antashka. She'll also give you the do's and don'ts of recycling this Easter Sunday. Do recycle, don't dump it. But anyway, I think she'll probably dig a bit deeper than that. That's all coming up at 12:30. It's part of the Around the Northwest programme on a Tuesday. And that is where we leave it for this Tuesday. And that's where I leave it until next Tuesday, because I'm off. Any suggestions on what I can do? I didn't think this through. I've taken time off and I think I'm going to go mad. I might come back. I might come back before I'm scheduled to. Have no plans. Anyway, listen, it's been lovely having you company as always. You're in the safe hands of Donal Kavanagh over the next couple of days. So for me, Caroline Orr and Shannon Wilkins, have a wonderful day. John Breslin's next.